Classical Christian education is a new experience for a lot of people. Whether you're totally new or you've been around a school for years, there are a lot of questions about, well, why do we do what we do? And since few parents or teachers today grew up in classical Christian schools, combined with the fact that there are more families than ever joining our schools, if you have a question, well, you're likely not alone. My guest today, Dr. Tim Dernlund, is back this time on Basecamp Live to share answers to 10 questions from the 100 that he has identified and written about in his new book, appropriately titled 100 Common Questions, A Guide to Understanding Classical Christian Education. If you're ready for some answers, stay tuned to this episode of Basecamp Live.
Mountains, we all face them as we seek to influence the next generation. Get equipped to conquer the challenges, summit the peak, and shape exceptionally thoughtful, compassionate, and flourishing human beings. We call it Ancient Future Education for raising the next generation. Welcome to Basecamp Live. Now your host, Davies Owens.
Well, Dr. Tim Dernlund, welcome back to Basecamp Live. So good to have you back.
Great to be here, Davies. Thanks.
You are a prolific writer. We were laughing just on how you write so many books. You've been on Basecamp before sharing some of the other books that you've written. And if folks are not familiar, timdernlund.com, you can go read about this, Spiritual Formation in Christian Schools, Modern versus Classical. We did a podcast on that. And then we did a podcast on classical Christian virtues, 60 virtues and their corresponding vices. Amazing book you wrote. And then now this 100 common questions. But you write these in while your wife is driving on long trips. Is that sort of the, is that the formula for book writing?
That's what I've been doing. We go on long trips and go camping, and she gets car sick while when I drive. So I sit in the passenger seat and start coming up with ideas.
That is it. That's just what a win-win. Your wife isn't nauseated and you have written a book. I just think that's an amazing combination. But in all seriousness, this is a wonderful title, 100 Common Questions. We're going to get into some of these questions. Why did you write this book? What was driving this particular writing piece?
Yes, sir. Thanks again for having me on here, Davies.
Of course.
You were a huge hit when we brought you to the school to speak at our fundraising event. So thanks again for doing that. And thanks for having me on the show. The reason I wrote this was because, like a lot of classical Christian schools around the nation right now, we had a boom in our enrollment this past year with about 18% growth. And so with about one out of every five students being new, I just wanted to help unify the vision and mission so that everyone's on the same page. And so we're giving this book to all of our families and our new families coming into the school so we can all have a shared common language as we push forward with training the next generation.
Yeah, and of course, you're at Bayshore Christian School, head of school there in Fairhope, Alabama. Yes. You've been there now for...
This is my third year.
Third year. Wow, time is definitely flying. I so enjoyed coming down and being with you guys back in the pre-COVID world, but hopefully I can get back at some point. You guys have a wonderful community there. Love being a part of it. But I love your vision, and you're right. There are so many schools, both those who are listening as educators that are watching just this flood of new applicants, which is exciting and amazing, and then a lot of folks listening are parents who, this is all new. Just how, wow, this is a, didn't see this coming. Now I'm in a classical Christian school, and filled with questions. So you've written this book really to try to tackle that, and 100 questions. Was that hard to come up with 100 questions that people are asking, or is it like, oh, I have 200?
There could have been more. I have thought about another 50 questions, okay. But I think refining it to 100 was good. But yeah, it's just, like you said, it's just sometimes new. My brother Steve, about 22 years ago, was helping me with my common questions at the time. So just a tip of the hat to him.
Well, we're going to be ambitious here. We're going to try to tackle 10 of these. And just as a disclaimer, these are not like the 10 anything questions. This is literally the 10 broad sample questions. So mention just how you structure the book, because you're covering a ton of areas in terms of what's within those 100 questions.
Sure. So there's about 7, 8, 9 questions under the category of history, philosophy, Christian, classical, grammar, logic, rhetoric, parenting, graduates, government, and quotations from some popular folks. So tried to group it together by what people have been asking about.
All right. So let's, again, no particular order here. This is just kind of a reach in the pot and pull one out. So the first one I'm pulling out is the question, what is the origin of classical education? So, and how would you answer that? And how do you answer?
So classical Christian education can be traced back to Plato and the foundation of the Academy in Athens in Greece around 385 AD. And so Socrates and Aristotle, Epicurus, Isocrates, all of them were instrumental in forming the ideals of education. And then when the Roman military conquered the Greeks, the intellectual ideas and the ideals of the classical education spread quickly into Roman culture as well. And then Quintilian came along, and he was a great Roman rhetorician in 35 AD, and he began to formulate a lot more of the specific ideas revolving around education. And then shortly thereafter, you had Ambrose and Origen and St. Augustine, who in Confessions really started solidifying Christian with classical. And then that was around 397 AD. He was the Bishop of Hippo, obviously, and had a great involvement there. And he saw classical Christian education and the liberal arts as the proper nutriment for the soul. And then it goes on in through the not so dark ages, the Middle Ages, and it thrived there. And it's just a great history and tradition that has been passed on until today.
Yeah, and I've heard it said it's, you know, the Greeks and the Romans really taught how to ask the right questions about what does it mean to be human, what's the meaning of life. Not that they got it right, and then the Christian answer to that is the response. So it really is a beautiful. Called the chocolate and peanut butter principle. You got the right question, the right answer coming together there in classical Christian. So, by the way, I know I'm only giving a snippet of each of the answers that are in the 100. So this is I'm putting you on the spot here, asking you to articulate in only a couple minutes because we're moving fast through these things. All right.
Yeah.
So, all right, reaching the grab bag. Next question. What do phrases like ad fontes and multum non multa mean?
So ad fontes is to the sources, right? So that's what we love about classical education. We don't read about texts or about individuals. We go to the sources, the original documents, and read them themselves. And that's one of the reasons we want to get our students learning Latin and Greek and other languages so that they can read the original texts and the original sources. And multum non multum, there's so many Latin phrases that we use, having those defined for our families is so good. So just meaning much, not many is multum non multa. We don't want to go broad and only be an inch deep in our knowledge. We want to go deep in what we study and give these great anchors to hold on to. I love your analogy of Base Camp Live, climbing the mountain, and going deep gives big anchors to hold on to while we're climbing that mountain, rather than just little shallow footholds or handholds.
Yeah, which is basically progressive modern education is, you know, whatever, jam and cram in the head and out the head next day. And you know, it's Teflon education. It bounces right off. So this is the deep stuff. And those are some fancy words you can use at your next dinner party and impress your friends and neighbors. So
there you go.
And there are schools out there like Ed Fontes Academy. So they're really going for it. They actually named their school using one of these fancy phrases. So you mentioned Latin. So let's jump into the next question of the 100. Why is the study of Latin important? I think that one comes up a lot. So how do you answer that?
Isn't that a dead language? Why would we study that? So Latin is a difficult language to study, and it requires not just the understanding of the language, but because of its structure, it helps students to reason and think logically. And the perseverance and patience that it trains at an early age is part of that virtue formation. But more importantly, to some of our parents, is that 50% of our words from the English language come from Latin. And so we understand our mother tongue better. And it can allow our students this great tool that they can use to go ahead and learn all the other Romance languages that come from it. And so as they get older, they can then study Spanish or Portuguese, French, Italian, Romanian, all these other languages. And then some of our folks love to hear very practical news that it increases standardized test score results from students who have taken Latin.
So. Yeah, no, that's a great response. I remember I did a couple of years ago, did a base camp interview with Dr. Tim Griffith at NSA. And it was the first time I'd heard anybody, he made the point too, just about logic and how it actually is training the brain. I mean, if you want to be a computer programmer, Latin is actually an excellent practicing of those skills of just how logically words are connecting and endings and so on. So, I mean, all these layers of value that, again, you just don't think of typically, especially if you didn't grow up taking Latin. So that's a great response.
And Tim is a true warrior poet. He's a rugged scholar, brilliant man. He picked a dicta out there now for Latin. And he's good.
There's some rock stars in our Latin world. There's no question about it. A lot of folks learning immersively to speak it, which again, you walk in a lot of our schools and it's spoken and it is anything but dead. It's very dynamic. So well said. All right. We talked about logic. Why is logic important and where does it fit into this whole process of classical Christian education?
Sure. So not just the logical thinking required from Latin, but our schools study logic, formal and informal logic, usually in somewhere between sixth through ninth grade and in the logic school, that middle stage. And it just trains critical thinking and common sense that are uncommon in our modern society. And the study of formal and informal logic is a major part of the movement. And these skills are really, really fundamental in writing papers, writing well-reasoned papers, giving well-reasoned speeches and communication skills, but also for science. They know how to do their lab reports and their labs so much better by having that foundation of logic and critical thinking in such a way that prepares them for that. And then if they want to go into journalism or law or any of these other fields where God might use them, debate, these logical skills are just so helpful.
Well, you know, I often talk about, I mean, really, especially we see in the modern cultural moment we're in, the lines between the barbarians and the civilized are becoming even more clearly drawn. And boy, what we're really doing is we're raising up citizens, civil people who are you know, grounded. And that idea of logic is so clearly missing today in so much public discourse, which is no longer public discourse, but public flaming and shouting and illogical yelling. So I always love, you know, especially during the political season where our kids would be watching political debates, maybe a presidential debate, and they're just shredding the argument. Like, okay, there was a non sequitur, that didn't work. You know, just clearly running circles around these politicians with their sloppy logic. So boy, we need that. We need that now.
It's so fun, isn't it? They don't have to yell back. They can just calmly sit there and articulate all the nonsense before them.
You're right. Right. Problem is when you're dealing with a completely illogical barbarian, they don't often engage in logical responses back to your thoughts. But hopefully there's enough. They just want to club you and move on. So hopefully our civilized young people will shift the direction of modern culture here for us. So. All right,
amen.
Moving on here, we're going to do one more and we're going to take a break. So reaching in the random of the 100. So, this is a good one. Why are false gods and mythology part of the curriculum? I've heard that one asked several times, especially in grammar school parents, a little worried about what their kids are reading.
Yeah, and it can be a scary thing and surprising thing for new families. So religion and objects of worship are an integral part of every culture. And the ancient Egyptians and Greeks and Romans worshipped many false gods, right? They were polytheistic. But the Hebrews and us as Christians worship one God. And when we do that and study the false gods, this causes a great tension and reveals a lot of the cultural warfare that's going on right now. But students can't fully understand history, literature, art, Bible, any of that without understanding the false gods that were so influential throughout the culture, just like the false gods that are influential in our modern day culture. And the Apostle Paul was well versed in all these gods and used it to witness to folks when he saw the statue of the unknown God and could just point out and say, let me tell you about that unknown God. It's Jesus Christ and you need to know him. And so all of these gods fall short, and it's good to see practically how these statues, these gods fall short. So then when we see the statues and gods that we set up in our own life, we know that they'll fall short, and they reveal and point to the true myth, the true God of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's well said. I often basically talk about the kind of the inoculation principle. I mean, it's, you know, like inoculating your children, where you get just a small dose of the false God so that you have sort of, to your point, you know, created familiarity with it. And I think that's so often the problem. And often we get accused of it. Maybe it's one of your questions is, aren't you just, you know, this perception that classical Christian schools are just creating these little Mayberry bubbles around kids, and they're totally, yes, they're protected from the real world, but it's not protecting and not preparing. It's protecting them at the right ages, and then it's absolutely preparing them and exposing them to the real arguments and the real challenges and the false gods as you're describing them. So I think that's well said. So.
Amen. It's just like a growing a tree in a greenhouse, right?
There you go.
It's not bad for the tree to be in a shelter while it's young and growing. So that way, when it's transplanted, its roots are strong and ready to survive and be a blessing to the
absolutely
to
yeah the culture. It's another great analogy. So, well, let's take a quick break. We're gonna come back. We've got we'll do another five or so of these with Dr. Tim Durnlin. I think we could probably do an entire part two base camp and just keep rolling, because these are really good, and I think most people that have spent any time around classical Christian circles have stumbled through these many questions and hopefully found answers. But if they can't get them answered, you've got a great source. Maybe before we go into break, people are thinking, well, where do I find this book? I mean, you've got a website. People can jump onto it's timdurnlin.com. Is that right?
Yes.
And then the ever popular Amazon is always a good spot too to find your book. So,
yeah, going straight to Amazon is easy. Just typing in A Guide to Classical Christian Education. You can find it there.
Sounds great. We'll take a quick break and be right back. He's worked with families for more than 30 years as a licensed professional counselor and marriage family therapist. It's time for a quick encouragement on the best practices of raising the next generation. We call it a McCurdy moment. So Keith, as we kind of jump back into the world that seems to be opening up, it's kind of in fits and starts, but in general, I think we're not where we were months ago, where everyone was sort of hiding under the sofa in the midst of a pandemic, and we can now get out more and choose more options for ourselves and our kids. How do we avoid jumping back in and getting overwhelmed?
You know, two words, go slow. Because what I am already seeing is what we have captured during COVID, which is reconnection of relationship with family, we are losing overnight. A very simple story is a mom who has two boys. They love baseball. They were heavily involved in baseball. Travel baseball opened up a month ago. 2 weeks in, she came into my office and said, I'm crazy. I'm going crazy. And I've screwed everything up that we've accomplished. And I said, what'd you do? She goes, the oldest one is on two travel teams. The youngest one is on one. They're out every night, and we've lost everything. And I said, well, you're telling me this, so have you already fixed it? And she said, yes, I have. I said, how'd you fix it? She said, they're not playing travel ball because it disrupts our family. They're playing school ball, and they'll play in season, and they will not travel otherwise. Now, that's not the decision that's necessarily appropriate for every family. What she realized, though, is she captured something that was missing. It was a necessary part of life, and it was the core of her family. And the reference for this, I was having a conversation today, I was doing a teacher training this morning, and the reference of this in Scripture is Mary and Martha. You know, it's interesting. Martha was not doing, the things Martha was doing, they were not bad. They were good things. It's just that she was preoccupied with good things to the point that she missed what was important in the moment.
Right thing at the wrong time. Yeah.
Right. And that's what we've got to look at. Most of the things that we are doing for our children, they're not bad things, but they are at the wrong time. And they're at the sacrifice of things that are at the core of healthy development for our children. So when we go back in, we need to go slowly.
Excellent. Excellent point, Keith. And that's certainly not only true for the activities for our children. It's just the life we're picking for our family right now. So it's a, you know, it's a rare moment, because we will easily quickly get back on that hamster wheel if we're not careful. So thanks for that great word of encouragement. Got a question for Keith to answer on a future McCurdy Moment? Well, send it to us at info@basecamplive.com and learn more about Keith McCurdy on the speaking page on the Basecamp Live website. Welcome back to Basecamp, chatting with Dr. Tim Dernlund. Tim, how long have you been in classical Christian education? How many years?
I started homeschooling 15 years ago.
Okay.
And then moved to it full-time 9 years ago.
Wow, 9 years ago. And you've been at head of school for 3 years, and you're also, should mention, on the board of the ACCS. You've been doing that. Fairly recent new board member.
Yep. So just one meeting so far with the Association of Classical Christian Schools.
That's awesome.
It's an amazing, wise group of individuals.
Yeah. Well, the movement's growing, and you know, our friends at ACCS are growing. We're growing at SCL. So there's just a lot of folks saying, hey, we got to join in, because there's so many schools that want to get started. And to the point of our entire podcast, there's so many people flooding in saying, wow, I love it. Don't get it, but I love it. Tell me more. So that's what we're doing on this podcast. We're going to be telling you a little bit more. And hopefully these are questions that you've asked yourself. I was saying over the break, probably for every one question that somebody articulates, there's five more that are kind of lurking behind the scenes in your head going, oh yeah, why is that? So these are great questions, Tim. So let's jump back in. Reaching in the grab bag here. How about what is Socratic learning? Boy, you hear that a lot, especially the upper school students. It sounds very intellectual, but what is it?
It does. It's question-based learning. So Socrates really was quite intelligent, to say the least, but claimed that he knew nothing, and he would just walk around asking questions. And so he lived about 400 years before Christ, and developed this method of instruction through questions. And when we do that in the upper school at our schools, and sit in circles and discuss through questions, it really draws the students into ownership of the knowledge that we want them to learn. When you have to articulate and be a co-teacher in a lot of ways through Socratic discussions, you have to really know your stuff. And so instead of just filling out bubbles, you have to articulate the information and advocate for why you believe what you believe. And so then our students are leaving not with just a head knowledge, but a heart knowledge, and it starts coming out of their fingertips, all this great information that they have. So it's a fun form of education.
Yeah, there's often make the statement, you know, it's the one who does the thinking does the learning. Actually, an Ambleside quote that's often said in the Charlotte Mason world. I mean, so that's true. I mean, I always think, look across a typical classroom in America. If you had a light bulb above every kid's head, and which light bulbs are actually lit up, meaning there's some active learning going on, it's probably, you know, the teacher who's the sage on the stage doing all the talking, and two kids that are halfway paying attention. Everyone else is, you know, counting the leaves on the trees outside the window, not engaged. So how do you turn on those light bulbs? That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, Dr. Owens, I'm glad you mentioned Ambleside. There's 7, 8, 9 different organizations, certainly that folks can get involved with. There's a lot of good organizations advancing classical Christian education.
Yeah, no, that's a good word. All right, so that's what is Socratic learning. Let's go to the next one. What type of students thrive in classical Christian schools? Great question, because the perception is, it's, you know, it's Bright Billy, you know, the really smart kid that gets to be in there, but all the regular kids in America can't quite hack it at that rigorous school. So what's the answer here?
So I've served at 3 different schools as head of school, and it seems to me that the hardworking students who are joyful and have supportive parents and value education and have a deep commitment to the Christian faith are the ones that do well. And so hardworking, joyful, supportive parents, and a love of learning. Those are the ones who do well. They don't have to come in bright. They don't have to have any other background other than a commitment and joy of the Lord.
Yeah. Well, and one of the great success stories we see through the Society of Classical Learning, I mean, ACCS is seeing it too, is just the number of schools in kind of non-typical, because typical would be, oh, they're kind of the suburban, you know, schools where, you know, stable families and all that. But there are some amazing success stories. Again, Russ Gregg's Hope Academy in Minneapolis, a very challenging urban environment. There are so many urban schools. They're on the rise for sure. International schools. So it's not just kids that have, you know, pretty stable home lives with supporting parents. It goes a long way, don't get me wrong, but you're right. There's a lot of thriving amongst really children of all walks of life, which is amazing.
So. For sure. And that's why a liberal arts education is so great, because it's a liberating arts. It liberates us from our ignorance.
Yes.
And it is for all students.
And that's probably another question about liberal arts, but we will save that for later, because it's not liberal and it's not just for art kids. So that's a whole nother, misnomer. But at any rate, moving on here, how are students prepared for college? Because that maybe is another, we talk about not being college prep, which kind of is, well, I'll let you answer that question. Are they prepared for college, and why don't we say we're college prep in many of our schools?
They're prepared for college, but it's not a college prep school, because our calling is so much higher, bigger, and greater than college. It's life prep. And we're preparing students for their entire life. And college is just one little thing that they're going to do along the way in life. So graduates, they blow the doors off the test scores going into college. They go to college and a lot of times will come back to us and say that their first year was not challenging, and that they were so well prepared. They'll come back and thank the teachers and say, "Wow, you guys really had us well prepared for college." So, yes, students are well prepared for college, but more importantly, they're prepared for life, and that's a bigger, higher calling that we have.
I'm glad you said that, because I've certainly, again, maybe it's regional or it's also just based on parents' dispositions, but I've definitely sat with the kindergarten parent that's visibly worried about little Johnny Susie getting into the big Ivy League, and I'm like, well, first of all, you can breathe a little bit, you got 12 years. Number two, there's a way better, bigger vision, as you were saying. College is just a given. My goodness, aim higher than that. Come on. So,
and number three, who would want to go to these Ivy League schools?
Well, that's
anymore?
A whole nother, yeah.
Harvard put in an atheist as the overseer of all the chaplains. And we just got a postcard from my oldest son from Princeton, and right on it, big and bold, was number one friendliest LGBTQ campus in the nation. Are you sure that's where you want to go?
Yeah. Pay to be woke.
That leads us into our next question, I think.
It does. how are social issues discussed at Classical Christian School? Do we just mock them? What do we deal with about that? Because this goes back to, again, we're preparing them for a very, very complicated world with barbarians running around. So how are social issues discussed?
They're discussed. I'm glad you said, do we mock them? Obviously, no. We don't mock those issues. Sometimes they can get laughable with the nonsense that's there, but things like homosexuality and critical race theory and abortion and marriage and transgendering, we just approach them head on with the truth of God's word and articulate what God's word says, and that homosexuality is wrong, that life begins at conception and is ordained by God until he calls us home, that the color of our skin doesn't determine anything about our beliefs or understanding. So one thing that we say is that there's two races of people. There's God's people and not God's people. And that obviously we love everyone created in God's image, which is every single human on earth. But we lovingly speak the truth, and it emboldens our kids to stand firm in a world where they can stand for the truth, because they've heard that truth and been mentored by our teachers through that process.
It's interesting. It seems like things are changing so fast. It just seems like in the last year, it went from worries about social issues and pressure seems very real in college life. But I'm looking at, corporate America has jumped on the whole very narrow narrative and very wokey and very specific. And it's interesting because the ability to be free thinking and to have civil discourse and debate is increasingly becoming, not allowed. You have to follow this exact prescribed way of seeing and being and existing, or else you can't exist in our organization. And I think we've got to not only have kids get through college, we got to have a workforce that can get out there and be able to blow apart some of these very faulty thoughts and assumptions. So,
amen.
This is a good, I think again, the vision is well beyond college and what we're preparing them for. So, all right, one last question, and then we'll do a little bonus round here. So last question is, are classical Christian schools weak in math and science? That's a great question. I definitely hear that a lot. These are perfect for humanity. You know, want to go into the humanities, go to a classical Christian. If you're really going to be a STEM person, don't go to the classical Christian school. To answer, how do you answer that?
And so that was a common fault maybe or shortcoming maybe 20 years ago in classical Christian schools, but we've developed now as a movement that no, not at all are these schools weak in math and science. Here at Bayshore Christian School, we have three individuals with doctorate degrees in our math and science upper school programs teaching. So we have a doctorate of medicine, a doctorate of organic chemistry, and we take these things seriously because they're in God's created order. And we're redeeming all things and becoming excellent in all things. And it's really, really fun. So it's just a outpouring of the logic that the students study, and they'd go deeply into the math and science. And so, no, we're actually really strong in them. And we have a robotics club and a science Olympiad team and math Olympics. So check it out. You'll find out that these folks are really strong.
Yeah. Well, again, if you look at the, you know, we that's probably another question you've got. I mean, we've got the trivium and there's the quadrivium. I mean, there's obviously in historic classical education, we never shied away from the sciences. They've always been there. But again, I think we got a bad rap 20 years ago. We probably didn't do it as well as we could have then. So, all right. Yeah. Bonus question. Yeah. You've got some great quotes. Oh, no, go ahead. Were you going to say one more thing? All right.
No, that's fine.
Okay. You've got some great quotes in the book, and I'd love to just, it's always inspiring, some quotes from Aristotle. Why don't we start there?
So one from Aristotle, he said, the best way to teach morality is to make it a habit with children. And so we do take virtue formation seriously, and it's a habit. It's action and doing. And so we like to train in much more than just the academic fields and the head knowledge, and really push in from an early age all the way through graduation, the idea of virtue formation and making the morality and living out of the Christian faith to be more like Christ a habit.
Yeah, that's a great, Charlotte Mason says, and 9 out of 10 things in life are habits. Like that's, we live in default mode, from how we brush our teeth to our interest in reading a book to the way we engage complicated issues in the culture. So I think Aristotle is dead on that, right on that. So go ahead. Yeah.
Have you seen, you're typically the one asking the questions, but have you seen ways that people are creating habits and virtue formation in schools?
I mean, I think that's almost the heart and soul of what a classical Christian school does all day long. And, you know, we don't always frame it that way, but it's the details. I mean, you could drop in on most of our schools and look at a kindergarten classroom and the habit of just, you know, orderliness when they learn to hang up their coat and put their book bag up. Like that's actually a life skill that orders so many other affections and aspects of your life going forward, all the way to the habit of how you, you know, narrate a book or you engage an idea or you take notes a particular way or you frame a question. I mean, there's just so many things that become who you are as a human being when you engage not only your K-12 experience, but life beyond, as we keep talking about. So yeah, absolutely.
It's so great, isn't it? And then when parents find out that there's also etiquette class and protocol class colloquy discussions, and it's just house systems where there's service projects. It's just such a beautiful, holistic form of education.
Right. And that's the word, that's the operative word of it's holistic. And I think that again is the great contrast to so much progressive education, which is, you know, what happens in the classroom is completely different from what's happening in the hallways. And actually, usually the hallway culture is really what's forming your child, not really what's happening in the classroom, which is just rote memorization for the most part. So again, it's just a totally different, it's not even the same animal. I mean, we're getting into more of your questions. I'm sure they're in here, but I mean, just what is education? That word is so overused and misunderstood in general. So everything has to be explained, which is what you're doing in this book. So, well, give us one more quote. How about a good C.S. Lewis quote?
C.S. Lewis is so brilliant. He has so much. I have a son who loves math and is diving deeply into math, but at the same time, he's trying to read the entire canon of C.S. Lewis. And that's
how old is your son?
He's 17.
Okay.
So There's so much to C.S. Lewis, but one of his great quotes is that the task of modern education is not to cut down jungles, but to irrigate deserts. And it goes along with what we were just talking about, Davies, just that there's a desert, a wasteland out there, not only in government education, in modern progressive education, but also within our own hearts and minds, and just to irrigate that with living water from the Lord Jesus Christ, but also all these great works of creation, and to awaken the moral imagination, yeah, and to turn us on to lifelong learning. C.S. Lewis is brilliant.
He is indeed. Just the very fact that your son is doing that, and it's probably not because his allowance is tied to doing it. It's probably because he actually has a habit that you formed in him to love the true, good, and beautiful, and to want that for himself. And what a great testimony to education that's been done well, and habits have been formed deeply. So congrats on that. That's encouraging.
He's a typical classical Christian student where you have to say, stop reading, put down your book.
There's this thing called Netflix. You're allowed to look at it. What? Yeah, that's probably a good question. Are classical Christian kids, able to, relate to the rest of the world? Or are they just sort of in these alcoves of book learning?
They relate so much better to the rest of the world for all age levels, and not just with their peers. Yeah. So,
well, they actually have social skills. They don't just text to talk. I mean, there's just so many things that our grandparents would be like, what? They can't talk with each other? Well, no, not anymore. They don't really know how to have an articulated conversation. They just send little emojis to each other, but we're going to fix that. So anyhow, well, Tim, thank you so much for your time. As always, I think we should have you back, because there's only 90 other questions we didn't even get to. So, but if you're interested, you can get the whole book. So,
Yep.
And that's on Amazon again, as you said. So, sounds great. All right. Well, Dr. Tim, thanks so much for your time and your great work. I can't wait for you to take another road trip and churn out another book. We'll be ready for it when you do.
Well, Davies, quite often I'll hear your voice a couple rooms over in my house. My wife enjoys listening to your podcast, and I've told you before, it helps me to mow the yard well when I put my headphones on. The work that you do for the movement is such a blessing, and you're kind to have me on here. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're most welcome. I think I need to start doing a listener call in. Tell us what you're doing when you're listening, because I know that people are cutting grass and washing dishes. We get a lot of housework done on Basecamp, but we just need to celebrate that. I mean, there's a lot of let us know if you're running a vacuum while you listen, so it could be good. All right, thanks so much. We will have you back on. It's always good to chat with you, and really appreciate this inspiring new book you've written. Thanks so much. Hey, Basecamp Live listeners, thank you again for listening to this episode and for your faithful support and encouragement for going on 4 years of podcasting. It was so good to meet many of you in person this summer at the ACCS and SCL conferences, and I always appreciate getting your emails. Reach out to me, let me know where you're listening from, what's on your mind. You can get to me at info@basecamplive.com. This fall is going to be an exciting time for Basecamp Live, with some new formats and updates coming to the show. We are also grateful for the number of individuals and organizations who partner with us. So a quick shout out to these groups, who I know personally, their leaders, and the quality of the resources that they provide both to individuals and to schools. First of all, the Focus Group. If you're running a capital campaign or working on a major donor development project, they are accomplished, skilled, and ready to serve you. Secondly, Classical Academic Press. Chris Perrin and his team continue to build a wealth of curriculum and training materials for your classical Christian education, whether you're teaching at home or at school. Thirdly, Scola Inbound Marketing. Their proven model is helping schools attract and keep new families, a value to any school. And then fourthly, the CLT, or Classic Learning Test. Jeremy Tate and his team provide students with an alternative standardized tests that is a much better way for students to demonstrate their knowledge and abilities. As we know, the SAT and ACT are being set aside by so many colleges and universities. So thank you so much for these resources and options that are given to us by these great sponsors. Finally, again, let us know where you're listening from, info@basecamplive.com. We'll connect with you again on our next episode. Thanks again for listening.